Well, good day, boys and girls. I'm in the bunker here again. It's Freya's Day, She-Wolf Day here in the bunker, and it is the 10th of June, 2016, and we're ready to roll here. Well, I'll tell you, we're still recovering from a big party we had at Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern last night, and the boys coaxed me to get up and sing a song dedicated to the second phase of chaos that we've just entered into, and also to celebrate a rich boy who's going to whip her ass. The wicked witch, the Amazon queen, she adopted the whole nigger race. How about that? Here we go. Listen to this and don't you laugh.
I'd never be. Started playing my guitar to earn a few bucks, singing my song, room full of drums. Record man heard me down at Kitty Bar. He said, come on to Nashville, I'll make you a star. Well, I might have been born just poor white trash, but I sold a million records, made a little cash. Doctors and the lawyers don't think it's funny that they're living next door to white trash with money. Bought a big house on top of the hill, a brand new Harley and a coupe de ville. Neighbors all cried when I moved in. It seemed real estate's cheaper than it's ever been. On the radio plays all the railroad songs. Lay around the pool and all day long. Country boy's life sure turned out swell. The neighbors don't like it, they can go to hell. Might have been born in this poor white trash, but I sold a million records, made a little cash. Doctors and the lawyers don't think it's funny that they're living next door to white trash with money. What do you think about a couple of pink flamingos out in the front yard? No? Well, I guess my black lawn jockey's out of the question.
You know, I need a little more audio on that one side there. You know, I've had that problem before. I got to get me a little preamp in that microphone line there, and we'll do it again. Yeah. Well, I suppose you were all up all night last night crying over Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay. People are such hypocrites. It's unbelievable, the hypocrisy. I remember back when all that happened with Muhammad Ali. They wanted to run him out of the country and kill his ass. I'll tell you, they were all the white boys were really after him. That's the way it goes in this country, you know, after a while. And then somebody dies, and suddenly they're the greatest thing that ever lived. And the hypocrisy is amazing. It's amazing. It's the number one sport in the country. Now, negrophilia. Yeah, negrophilia with old Muhammad Ali, who became a Muslim, a black Muslim, way back. And people keep forgetting that's not a real Muslim. the real Muslims have never accepted black Muslims. But anyhow, now they're making it like he became a real Muslim. So anyhow, don't make any difference. All that stuff crazy anyhow. So there's too many other good things happening to spend too much time on that. Because, boy, I'll tell you, the radio waves, the TV waves are heating up like mad. They're just going crazy over getting into the election. Now's the main event, man, when the wicked witch and the Amazon queen and the black mother of all black people, kids, is Hillary, and she's gonna milk it for all she can get. You know, I want to make her honorary KKK leader. I sure do. And I'll tell you why. Because she has made more money off the Negroes than anybody. She has really milked those Negroes, and they love it. They just love it. They went down there to Africa, and they're going to help all the Negroes in Nigeria. Nigeria is the most corrupt country in Africa, and she made nice with the warlords down there in Nigeria. And she came away, they say she came away robbing $1 billion off of them. I doubt whether it was that much, but she got millions into her bank account. Pretty good for once she left the White House, they had no money at all. In fact, they were in debt a couple of million. So she, really, and then she did this. They did the same thing down in the Caribbean. Yeah. They went down there and robbed the people. You know, I think they're supposed to get about $600 million a year welfare, not only in Nigeria, but in the island countries down there in the Caribbean, Jamaica. The Clintons stole most of that money. Most people don't know it. So I think she is turning out to be the best new white KKK leader that's around, so we should give her credit. Why not? She says she loves all these people, and then she's robbing them blind. She's robbing them blind, and it's amazing. I guess that new book Clinton Cash lays it out pretty good too. Of course, remember all politicians do it, but I think the Clintons are real experts at it. They have no shame. Those two have no shame. You know, they lost a whole lot of money. That's why they come out of the White House broke from hiring attorneys to get Bill off the hook for his oral sex in the closet in the Oval Office. Yeah, that's where that money went. Well, the latest frozen treat in India is leaving a bad taste in people's mouths, I guess. Photos of Hitler-themed ice cream, which were originally manufactured in Uttar Pradesh, a state in northern India, and sold across the country, are making the internet rounds. Yep. The frozen sweet comes in cartons depicting images of Adolf Hitler frowning next to ice cream, along with a carton version of the Fuhrer wearing a swastika top hat. Wow. But Nirja Kumar, the owner of the MVF product, the company behind the ice cream, claims the cones are simply a reference to a familial nickname. In our Uttar Pradesh village, anyone who has a Karak Majish is called Hitler, Kumar explained to the Hindustan Times. One of my uncles is a short-tempered and strict man, so we nicknamed him Hitler. While naming his particular batch of cones, I thought, why can't we have a little fun at the expense of my uncle and name the cones after him? That was how the name originated. Yeah, right. Kumar names different batches of cones after real people and says he believes most Indian residents of his village probably do not recognize the infamous image of the mustachioed dictator. The Daily Mail reports that the cones are already available across India, but Kumar told the Hindustan Times that most of the cones sold out last year. But that hasn't stopped those in high places from condemning the treat. height of tastelessness. Indian ice cream named after Hitler. Would the Germans name a sausage after Gazi? Indian Congress leader Shashi Tharoor tweeted along with a picture of the controversial cartoons. Oh. Nathuram Godse was the militant Hindu nationalist leader who is best known for assassinating Mahatma Gandhi. Other Twitter users have followed suit with their confusion over and condemnation of the product. Wow. What do you say to that, boys and girls? You know, the only reason that so many Indians loved Hitler was, and there were sizable numbers, because he was kicking the British ass. That's all they cared about. He was kicking the British ass, so that made him a lovable guy to them, you know. But I don't think there's too much more farther down the gene pool you can go is when you look at the Indians overall. I mean, they are a racial mess. Why don't you industrious Aryan boys get together and make yourself an ice cream mold of Adolf Hitler or Mussolini or, Donald Trump, and sell ice cream? Wow, you can make a fortune fast. However, when it comes to Negroes, the Indians are pretty racist. Yeah, they sure are. Gandhi worked in South Africa. He worked in a newspaper, and he was always attacking the blacks. Check it out. It's in the records. You can dig it out, what he thought of blacks. New Delhi, fear and anger, though, those are emotions that shadow Odell Emmanuel Opaimi every time the Nigerian man steps out of his New Delhi apartment. Well, he should step out of it and get on a plane and go back to Nigeria, where he can probably get his head chopped off by the recent dictator. Every encounter with Indians is fraught with those feelings, whether he's taking an auto rickshaw or the metro, buying vegetables, or trying to find a spot to park his old car. Quote, when I sit down in the metro, people sit away from me. Even old men and women will stand up as if they had any contact with me to give them a disease. Well, that's why you're untouchable. Blacks are untouchable. Describing the mixture of fear and revulsion of which most Indians treat Africans. It's terrible. Opaimi is among hundreds of thousands of Africans in India. What the fuck are they doing in India? Drawn by better education and work opportunities? For them, rampant racism is a daily battle in a country where their dark skin places them at lower end of the series of strictly observed social hierarchies. Indians routinely perceive Africans as either prostitutes or drug dealers. Well, aren't they? The daily indignities Africans suffer, Negroes that is, usually goes undocumented both by the police and the local media. They don't pay much attention to it. That changed on May 20th when the Congolese student Masunda Kitra Oliver was fatally attacked in a dispute over hiring an auto rickshaw in New Delhi. The three men who insisted they had hired the vehicle beat him up and hit him on the head with a rock, killing him, according to the police. Well, I'm sure that happens between the sects of Indians themselves. What's the big deal? One Negro gets his head beat in? The death made the city's African students, diplomats, and business owners rally together, demanding quick justice. The African heads of mission in New Delhi issued a statement asking the government to address racism and Afrophobia in the country. Wow. Given the pervading climate of fear and insecurity in Delhi, the African heads of the mission are left with little option than to consider recommending to their governments not to send new students to India. You nigger boy, you stay out of here. You're going to get your head bashed in. Unless until their safety can be guaranteed, the statement said. You can't guarantee anybody's safety, any place in the world, you fool. The killing and outrage has sparked drew an unusual prompt reaction from local police and India's foreign minister. Well, that's because some of the big businessmen probably got on their ass, foreign businessmen like the British. Two men suspected in the attack were arrested within a day, while a third remains at large. And like I say, they're probably getting excited about it because Western businessmen and politicians are bitching about it. Minister Shuma Swaraja tweeted her ministry asked for stringent action against the culprits. I wonder if they get that excited when an Indian of one sector religion beats a head in on another one. That goes on every day. Race riots are ongoing thing in India. Big deal. But the ministry also said all criminal acts involving Negroes should not be seen as racial in nature. Oh, no. The bad press the country got as a result of killing prompted India's glacial government machinery to move quickly to try to address this issue. This always amuses me when a country just goes apeshit worrying about what the rest of the world think. To tell the rest of the world to go get lost, screw you. This is our country, we're going to do it. We want to beat the head in on a Negro, we're going to do it. An India African artist exhibit was cobbled together at government expense and on short notice. All of a sudden, they love the Negroes. A protest planned by African students in the Indian capital was put off after government officials reached out to African student groups and promised them more welfare. The police and government began holding workshops in neighborhoods across the city to sensitize local residents about their African neighbors. Because big business, the business people over there, they think they're going to lose money, man. They're going to lose money. There were other well-publicized examples of anti-Negro prejudice in India before Oliver's death. Well, like I said, check what Mahatma Gandhi said about him. In February, a Tanzanian woman was beaten and stripped naked by a mob in southern city of Bangalore after a Sudanese student car hit an Indian woman. Well, that seems fair. If he was driving recklessly and ran over an Indian woman, he should get beat up. In September 2014, a video of three Negro men were being beaten inside the security booth at a New Delhi metro station went viral. For several minutes, a large mob beat the man with bare hands and sticks and shoes as they climbed up the walls of the glass booth in terror. The police were absent. They were having a donut. These incidents made it to the local newspapers. Hundreds more do not. Prejudice is open in India. It's not prejudice, it's discrimination. They know why they're doing it, and they know what blacks are like over there. The matrimonial columns of the newspaper are strictly segregated along caste lines. Yeah, see? Landlords in the cities, including New Delhi and Mumbai, deny homes to people based on race and religion. Well, this is good, getting back to the good old days, man. That's okay. Indians from northeastern India who look different because of their Asian features are routinely harassed and have to endure being called names on the streets. Oh, poor boys. But the worst kind of discrimination is reserved for Negroes, African Negroes, in a country obsessed with fair skin and skin-lightening beauty treatments. Aha! Their dark skin draws a mixture of fear and ridicule. You can tell by watching, if you see some of the beauty contests in India, the light ones with light eyes and all that, you know, they usually win. Landlords shun Negroes in all but the poorest neighborhoods. And in those, they're charged unusually high rent. AB must be over there. There must be some kikes over there. African students in New Delhi, neighborhood of Chhatrapati Shivaji Maharaj, reported paying 15,000 rupees, $225 a month, for a single room and a bathroom that would normally rent for 6,000 to 7,000 rupees. Well, they charge people that over here, too, for a one room in a motel, you know. More, actually, they charge $400 or $500. Strangers point at them and laugh or gang up and assault them. Well, some of them are pretty funny looking, I'll tell you that, especially those black women with their big fat asses. at a recent racial sensitization session in Kahaturapur, the mutual distrust between the Indian landlords and the African tenants was glaring. Quote, "I'm scared," said Nancy Joseph, a 23-year-old law student from South Sudan. "Well, go home to South Sudan then. That fear keeps her from visiting friends at night. The auto rickshaw driver may refuse to take her. Groups of Indian men could gather and call her vile names just for fun." I thought the United States was so racist. "Delhi is the worst city I've ever lived in," said Eddie King, a student from Nigeria. "He hasn't made a single friend in a year and he spent in the country." "Then go home." I can't talk to my classmates. They won't even answer me. They pretend they don't understand. Oh, the Indian KKK. The landlords say African tenants drink all day and play loud music all night, characterizations that Africans dismiss as unfair. It may be unfair, but it's the truth. They do the same thing here. Quote, "They stand drinking beer on the road. We feel scared crossing the area," landlord Umid Singh said. Whether this session succeeded in sensitizing anyone is unclear, but I doubt it. Police simply told both sides to try to understand each other. Well, that's the problem. The Indians do understand the Negroes, just like we understand. We don't understand them as well as the Indians. I do. You do. King said he'll leave India as soon as he finishes his studies next year. "The African man cannot work with Indians. It's just the truth," he said. Wow. Apayimi, a 34-year-old soccer coach, said he will stay. "It's easier for him to earn a living here than Nigeria, so he will endure the indignities." Well, if you want to put up with it, that's your problem. Those include hearing someone call out Habshi, the Hindu word for black person, as he tries to get on a bus. Well, if he's black, he's black. What's wrong with that? "Hey, black." Recently, as he tried to park his car, someone called him Bandar. "Ooh, a monkey." The security was looking, but they said nothing, Opaimi said, except they were giggling. Well, we are scared. We don't fight back because we know what will happen, he said. "They will break your head with a brick. These Indians don't fuck around, man. Not like we do." That's amazing information coming to us. The person that sent this to me said, India, the most racist country in the world. You know, this shooting that just happened over in Israel, where Palestinians, I guess, decided they'd had enough and shot some people in a store. Well, there's a story come out of Israel about this. This story should be tagged under soon to be a major motion picture. A policeman who lives near the area where the shooting attack took place Wednesday night let one of the terrorists into his home and gave him water, unaware of his identity. Well, the encounter took place while the terror event was still in full swing, as both cousin terrorists from the Yada village near Hebron in Judea were trying to flee the scene. One of them, who had already dumped his empty Carl Gustav machine gun and was unarmed, ran with a group of fleeing civilians who had no clue about his identity. To remind you, both killers were dressed up in evening suits. As he was running, the terrorist reached an apartment building with a group of residents hanging out near the entrance and asked them for some water. The policeman who lives in the building took him upstairs, sat him down, and gave him a glass of water, and went outside to join the manhunt, leaving the terrorist with his wife and other family members. The policeman ran outside and joined the chase, when shortly thereafter he came upon another terrorist who had been neutralized lying on the ground. Only then, when he saw the killer dressed in the same impeccable suit as the swarthy man he had left at home, did it dawn on him that his family was now playing host to a deadly terrorist. According to the policeman's testimony, he ran home very fast, taking along a few fellow policemen. Opening his apartment door, he realized to his relief all was still well. The terrorist was unarmed and probably did not want to risk an attack on the family, so he remained seated quietly next to his glass of water. The policeman quickly overtook him and sent out word to the rest of the force. "Come on, boy, I got one here. He's watching television with my wife." At that point, one of the cops who had come into the apartment with his gun drawn behind the first policeman returned the weapon to its holster and let out a bullet which ricocheted and lightly injured the hero of our story. The cop mishandled his weapon, let a bullet fly in the apartment, and shot one of his buddies. Jeez, this is funnier than hell. The other terrorist was shot and neutralized near Tel Aviv Cinemateki by a security guard employed by the Sarona Mall. A consummate professional, the guard heard shots, identified the suspect, and hit him while the latter was running. With his cool response, the security guard prevented a second bloodbath. Well, there you go. That's some of the funny stuff that comes out of some serious stuff. So you see over there in Israel, the genetics is so mixed up that they can't tell the difference between most of the dark-skinned Jews and the dark-skinned Palestinians. They can't tell the difference, which is quite interesting. And, of course, the dark-skinned so-called Israelis is growing like mad, and eventually there will be no white Israelis. But that don't make no difference as long as they hang out with this Judaism stuff. Just like in this country, the whole country could turn black or brown, and they say, "Well, that's all right. They're all going to Christian church. Who cares?" It's interesting how it's okay to feel threatened and take aims and at trying to protect yourself over in Israel. It's perfectly all right to love the Second Amendment and carry a gun around, but you're a bad guy if you do it here. This is a little thing that appeared on Facebook. Several days ago, I engaged the leftist activists at the Jerusalem Day Parade there in Israel, including Sarah Tuttle, singer, and a friend of hers that did not give her name. They claimed Muslims in the Damascus Gate Marketplace were friends of theirs. I challenged them to go in and ask the first Muslim they find why the Muslims built a mosque on top of the Jewish Temple Mount. Well, of course, it's just to piss you off. I also challenged them to go ask their friends in what year did an Arab-Palestine country, state, or land exist before Israel. And I will be there to watch the reaction. Sarah's friend claimed that my gun proves that I'm not looking for peace. You see, liberals live in a make-believe world so far out of reality it resembles a Disney cartoon. You see how different it is for this guy, this Jew, to talk than to you to talk about blacks in Chicago? Jews are being slaughtered in the streets by Muslim terrorists. And white Christians are being slaughtered by blacks in the big cities of the United States. We are unable to walk through the gates of Jerusalem throughout the year. Jews are being shot, run over, murdered, and the gun that I wear for self-defense proves that I don't want peace. They really have to stop sniffing that peace drug. This morning I went shopping in Rami Levi. Now what if you said that in your community, if you talked the same way this Jew does in the Jew community over in Israel? You know what would happen, don't you? They'd want to hang your ass. There were Muslims who were in the middle of the Ramadan shopping and Jews shopping for Shabbat and the upcoming Shabbat holiday, and I was there with my M16 strapped to my back as well as my secondary weapon on my hip. He shows a picture of him. He's all ready. When I was walking around over in Israel, you see all these people with M16s and 9mm all over the place. Not only were the Jews not nervous about the fact that I'm walking around with two guns, the Muslims knew that if a terrorist walks into that store, I will be protecting them just like everyone else. The guns that I and many other people wear are not a situation we asked for. They are a reaction to a situation we're forced into. Yeah. We did not start the wars. We did not ask for the wars. In fact, that the Arabs lost the wars they started does not turn them into victims, only losers. Well, that's an argument between you Jews and the Arabs. I want to leave you all to yourself. No foreign aid, no nothing. Sink or swim. If you want to attack the Arabs, go ahead. I don't care. Arabs want to attack you? I don't care. It's not my business. I understand the world has gotten used to Jews picking up their arms and walking like sheep to the slaughterhouse, but they better wake up and understand we will do whatever is needed to make sure that never happens again. Well, I feel the same way about white people in the United States. We're saying the same thing. I will not apologize for my guns, nor will I apologize for unwilling to cooperate with the radical Islamic terrorists who want us once again to become victims. Just like here with our radical blacks, radical Mexicans, radical Jews, radical everybody that hate our guts. Whenever you speak up and say you're for the best interests of the white race, that's exactly what's going to happen. I'm sorry the liberals in Israel have been struck with a fatal case of Stockholm Syndrome. I'm happy the disease is not airborne. The cure? Truth. The only person who would be nervous about my guns are the terrorists who are looking to murder my people, and to them I say, be nervous and be scared. This is why I spend my days and nights with standing together 24/7 IDF, supporting IDF soldiers and whatever they need. Too bad our people don't act like that over here, huh? Yeah. We say anything and we're anti-Semitic or anti-black and this and that. So what? I'm free to be anti-whoever I want to be. If they don't like it, they can kiss my white ass. We must never apologize for our ability to fight back and defend ourselves. I agree. Just like we should never apologize for winning wars the Arabs started in order to destroy us, and we certainly should not apologize for dancing through the streets of Jerusalem. Go get them, man. It's your country. Do whatever you want. I don't want anything to do with any of this stuff over there. That's the Arabs and the Jews' business. Let them fight it out. If you feel guilty for our ability to fight back, do not get upset at the world if they criticize us for doing so. You convince them that a Jew with a gun is a problem and not the reason we are forced to go shopping with an M16 on our backs. Well, I gotta say, I agree with the guy. Man, he's practicing the Second Amendment over there in Tel Aviv, walking into the store with a 9mm on his belt and an M16 on his back, and he's not bothering anybody, he's not pushing anybody around, he's not killing any Arabs, and if he gets attacked, he's going to kill whoever wants to attack him. In fact, in the black so-called community, I hate that word, in the black areas of Chicago and so forth, if a black guy is carrying around a gun, He should be able to have an M16 on his shoulder and a 9mm. And if he uses it properly, fine. Some black criminal, drug-crazed idiot tries to kill him, blow his brains out. That's the way I feel about it. Everybody should be able to protect themselves, you know. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. At the bottom of that article, it says, the author's opinion does not necessarily reflect the opinion of the Jewish press. I'm sure it doesn't. Because whether you're in the United States or Israel or any place else, people who say it the way it is and are willing to stand up for something, they're horrible. Press don't like that. They can't make as much money. The big business guys can't make as much money. Looks like a German KKK is on the rise here, and Dennis Meehan's not even there to head it up. Report, Germany fails to tackle rise in hate crimes against refugees. You mean self-protection against invasion. Human rights watchdog. Human rights, Hotze. Forget human rights. That's ridiculous. Watchdog has slammed Germany for failing to protect refugees or invaders from racially motivated violence. In other words, the Germans defend themselves, right? Right? Wait a minute here. Amnesty International, big deal, on Thursday criticized German authorities over their response to hate crimes across Germany and a sharp increase in attacks against invader shelters. Well, the people of Germany didn't ask to have these people invade their country. It was Angela, I'm an asshole, whore Merkel who did it. She's the one who opened it up. I mean, if you had put it to the vote, most people would have said no. So what do you expect them to do, idiot? Quote, with hate crimes, with love crimes on the rise in Germany, long-standing and well-documented shortcomings in the response of law enforcement agencies to racist violence must be addressed. Yeah, need more of it, said Amnesty EU researcher Marco Perolini in a statement. Well, take that bastard out behind the barn and hang him. The federal and state authorities need to put in place comprehensive risk assessment strategies to prevent attacks against invaders. Further police protection is urgently needed for shelters identified at a high risk of attack. Well, what about the attacks that these people are doing on the population of Germany? In March, journalist collective Corrective and German news magazine Der Spiegel, there's two Jew operations, reported that the majority of crimes against invader shelters in 2014 remained unsolved. That's because even the cops don't like it. Out of the 157 investigations, only 15 led to convictions. Amnesty said that Germany witnessed 1,031 crimes against invaders in 2015, 16 times as many as those committed in 2013, which had amounted to 63. Meanwhile, racist, violent crimes against racial, ethnic, and religious minorities increased by 87%. From 693 crimes in 2013 to 1,295 crimes in 2015, the report added. Self-defense, national defense, racial defense. Katja Andrews, communications director for coordinator for the EU's Agency for Fundamental Rights, that sounds like a Marxist outfit, told DW that Germany is not the only EU member state affected by racially motivated discrimination and violence. They come in there by the millions and sit down and then they expect the people not to react. How would you feel if you kicked out, you don't have much money, you get kicked out of your apartment by these bastards. You go live on the street, we got to put these assholes from Syria in your apartment. Racial discrimination is most definitely an issue in Germany. Good. But not only there, it is a problem throughout the EU. That's great. And one that must be combated at the level of national governments, regional authorities, and frontline practitioners, Andrews said. No, I don't think so. I think you try to interfere with the population, they're going to kick your ass. Without belittling the seriousness of these figures, it must be understood that in countries such as Germany that collect such data on hate crime and other bias-motivated incidents, the high numbers often show that the given country is doing more to record and combat phenomena than other EU countries, while official statistics show a low number of attacks. Yeah, not near as many attacks as we have here in the big cities. The Amnesty report noted that while Germany witnessed a surge in anti-immigrant or anti-invader sentiments in the past year, the German public has been among Europe's most welcoming to refugees. Well, what am I going to say? You get what you pay for. You get what you ask for. And if you don't listen, you'll have to feel, Mr. German Man. No place liberalism is the worst form of virus. It sure is. Hate crime mania is sweeping the country, and it's going to get far worse for white people. A 52-year-old Palo Alto man is facing hate crime, strong-arm robbery, and hit-and-run charges after he lost his temper over a parking dispute with an Indian taxi driver and started yelling racial slurs at the man, police announced Thursday. Well, he should have. He should have. The incident took place May the 27th when David Charles Cerner parked his black 2015 Toyota Camry in two spaces at a parking lot at Urban Lane just south of University Circle in Palo Alto, police stated in a news release. The victim, who police described as a man in his 40s, very dark from India, pulled up behind Cerner in a 2005 Ford Crown Victoria taxi cab and asked Cerner to move his car into one spot so he could park. That's when Cerner shouted racial epithets at the man and returned to his cab. Then Cerner got out of his car and tried to punch the victim from the passenger side door of the taxi while continuing shouting slurs, "You filthy wog." The victim took out his phone to take a picture of his attacker, prompting Cerner to move the driver's side window and punch the man in the jaw, which most white people would do. Then he snatched the phone out of the victim's hand and threw the device at the man's head, cracking the screen. Oh! Authorities said Cerner went back into his car and back twice into the cab while trying to reverse out of the spot before jumping a curb and driving west on University Circle. Two witnesses saw the incident, authorities said. One of them called the police and is going to testify his ass off against this white guy. And you can bet they were white people. The people who call up and snitch on white people, they do it all the time. They can't wait to snitch and appear in court against a white person. Well, the time will come when that'll be taken care of. The victim did not need medical attention, but the police said he complained of jaw pain. Well, you better go back to India and get a doctor. Both cars had minor damage from the incident, authorities said. Cerner was booked into Santa Clara County Main Jail on suspicion of felony robbery for taking the victim's phone. And, oh, he just threw it. He was also booked on suspicion of two misdemeanor counts of hate crimes for the physical assault and damaging of personal property, along with misdemeanor hit and run. That's how they're going to stretch all this shit, boys. White boys, they're coming after you. You could just as easily be caught in a situation like this because you get mad and angry. Well, hopefully it'll cause more feeling about it, and maybe whites will start thinking a little differently. But believe me, any white that will snitch on another white in situations like this is not your friend. That's for sure. He or she has gone over to the other side. He's sold out his race. If you went over to India and pulled that stunt, boy, I can imagine what would happen.
News breaks late in the afternoon.
Hate crime at a prestigious Metro Detroit private school. An anti-discrimination group says what happened to a Muslim American student at Cranbrook crosses the line between bullying and hate. As Priya Mann reports, the school is moving quickly to address the claims.
This 18-year-old senior is from Hamtramck and was accepted here at Cranbrook on a full scholarship. She also boards here. Well, now she's accusing Cranbrook of ignoring her allegations of a violent and racially motivated attack that happened here on campus.
It was really loud and it was really scary.
We're protecting the identity of this Cranbrook student who broke down while describing the alleged assault. She says last month she was approached by five young men while she was alone jogging on campus.
I'm just really scared because I'm like, I'm pretty shy and I'm really quiet in school. I've never harmed anybody and I don't know what happened to me. So just, I don't know.
She says the young men prevented her from leaving while they yelled racial and religious slurs.
Arab, I should go back to my country. I don't belong here. They screamed Allahu Akbar.
Eventually, the young men left and the student went back to her room. She says just hours earlier, her family was taunted on campus.
This might be because my mom is a hijabi and they saw her and they just wanted to mock us.
The victim says school officials didn't take her complaint seriously. In a statement, Cranbrook says, "We are surprised and disappointed to hear these inflammatory allegations. We have long celebrated the value of diversity in all of its forms and absolutely do not tolerate acts of harassment or discrimination." Local 4 obtained an email sent by the dean of girls shortly after the victim came forward. It reads, "The stories have changed so much that it is hard to know what to believe, but I am reminded that the victim came back to the dorm that night and told no one. I could see them going to a newspaper."
The school seems to be operating with more concern as to the image of this prestigious institution as opposed to really tending to the needs of the victim and her family.
This is about future students coming here.
And his high school senior actually graduates tomorrow. She says she never expected to end her high school career like this, but she wanted to come forward and tell her story. Now, the ADC hopes at the very least these 5 young men are identified and charged with assault and at the very most charged with ethnic intimidation. Reporting live, I'm Priya.
Well, how about this one? The number of hate crime offenses in Scotland related to football have risen by 49% in the past year, new figures have shown. There were a total of 287 of these crimes reported in 2015-2016. They related to 117 fixtures across 29 stadiums, up from 54 games played at 21 stadiums the year before. Justice Secretary Michael Matheson said the Offensive Behavior Act was an important tool in tackling offensive behavior, including sectarian. Let's see here. The hate crimes figures released by the Scottish government showed that 581 charges with a religious aggravation were reported to the Crown Office and Prosecutorial Fiscal Services in 2015-16 at a 3% increase on 2014 and 15. So there you go, boys and girls. They're getting with it over in Scotland. Let's close out with my favorite and the stuff you should really remember. And you need this. You need it. Might is right. Here we go.
The absolutism. There is no other power in the land that can effectively hold it in check. The Tsar of Russia possesses less actual authority than our federal government. With a standing army in the hollow of its hands, it can do exactly as it pleases. An example, if it can collect enough revenue to purchase statesmen and pay the salaries of its Praetorian cohorts. Most Americans are only now beginning to perceive these things, but they were foreseen and also foretold in part by clear-sighted individuals before the Constitution itself was formally enthroned. Today, all the old Sphinx questions are up again for solution. No man of balanced sense can honestly believe that these problems are to be settled by ballot box stuffing or editorialism. Settled they must be upon the good old rule, the simple plan, and thereafter settled and resettled again and again. For there is no finality in social adjustments, and there should not be. Material strength is the basis of all human greatness, and material strength must settle the tyranny of the greatest number, probably with fire and steel. All other theories are chimeras, lies, delusions, make-believe, and of no account. The philosophy of power has slumbered long, but whenever men of sterling worth are found, it must again sweep away the ignoble dollar-damned peddlerisms of today and openly, as of old, dominate the destiny of an emancipated and all-conquering race. What is viler than a government of slaves and usurious Jews? What is grander than a government of the noblest and the best, who have proved their fitness on the plains of death? Cromwell and his Ironsides, Caesar and his legion shall be born again, and the thunderous tread of Sulla's fierce destroyers shall roll and rumble amid the fire and glare and smoke of crumbling constitutionalisms, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, warfare without end. Yapping politicians may harangue base city mobs of hirelings and Christlings with, alas, poor Yorick, rhapsody as if struggle and strife were the evil of all evils. Figures of speech, however, cannot breathe the breath of life into feline philosophies that never have had the slightest foundation in fact. The survival of the fittest, the toughest, is the logic of events and of all time. They who declare otherwise are blind. The chief point is this, that fitness must honestly demonstrate itself not by ignoble theft in theory, but by open conflict as per Darwin's law of battle. How can citizens be honestly described as free and equal who are not, who never were, free and equal in any reasonable sense of the phrase? How can they be even considered men, whose whole lives are governed by cast-iron regulations, whose every movement is circumscribed and restrained by penal threats, even whose secret thoughts are in a constant state of silent repression? It is no apology whatever to affirm that the people themselves enact all laws they are commanded to obey. Even that statement is a falsity, and if it were true, it would not justify majority dictatorship or any other kind of dictatorship. The Constitution, under which all other laws are born, was accepted not by us, but by bewigged individuals who are long since rotten. We are ruled, in fact, by cadavers, the inhabitants of tombs. Why should agreements made by coffined dead men bind and mortgage living, pulsing, breathing beings? The Constitution, under which all other laws are born, was accepted not by us, but by bewigged individuals who are long since rotten. We are ruled, in fact, by cadavers, the inhabitants of tombs. Why should agreements made by coffined dead men bind and mortgage living, pulsing, breathing beings? Their bones have long ago molded into ozone and fertilizers. Who drew up and signed the Bill of Rights, Magna Carta, the Sermon on the Mount, the Declaration of Independence, our glorious Constitution, etc., etc.? Rotten are the brains that concocted them and the fingers that signed and sealed them. Equally rotten are their irrational and infantile philosophies. Rotten also in their heart are the men who obey, under compulsion, voices from the tomb. No doubt those old documents served their purpose at the time, but new occasions teach new duties, and new ages require not only new leaders, but new deeds. Again, most acts of Congress are the Machiavellian work of eminent rogues. Curse them whose very names are almost forgotten except by partisan chroniclers and printers of public school histories. As for the common law, it is an inheritance from those interesting old days when Saxon and Norman earls, they were genuine noblemen then, for they had won their position by risking their lives in battle, administered justice direct per media of knotted clubs, halted knives, and long-handled cleavers. That was the only kind of law understood by our uncivilized forefathers, for they had not been educated into the profound convictions that governments and laws derive all their just powers from the consent of the governed. Such an expression would have sent them into convulsions, and he who uttered it would be considered a most excellent fool. No doubt our ancestors were somewhat rude in their manners, somewhat deficient in sweetness and culture, but in matters of frozen fact they were decidedly logical. They did not sneak to public meetings and swagger about liberty, justice, and equality of opportunity, or rights of man when they knew full well that not only their lives, but everything they nominally possessed was by leave of their conquerors and proprietors. They accepted their position pro tem, and when again ready, honestly re-entered the doom ring to test anew their fate. If they could come alive again, how those old pirates and freebooters would stare in shame and scorn at the sight of their tenderfoot posterity, walking up in solemn, horny-handed, hump-backed procession in shoddy rags before an idol altar called a ballot box, dropping into its gilded maw, printed invocations for justice, mercy, liberty, peace in our time, O Lord, protection, cheap money, more laws, more laws, more laws. How our blonde, clean-limbed ancestors would guffaw. Indeed, they would probably keep on guffawing till they guffawed themselves to death again. Oh, they would say, to think that our seed should have sunk so low. 7. But equality before the law is all we mean, whimpers the everlasting sophist, the cunning liar. Let us see. By what rational method can any two litigants be placed in a position of unconditional equality before the law? First of all, plaintiff and defendant always possess totally different physical and mental characteristics, different personal magnetisms, and different sized bank balances. Also, all judges, juries, and legal officials are unequals in temperament, ability, courage, and honesty. Each one has his own peculiar idiosyncrasies, prejudices, inferiorities, superstitions, and price. Each again may be more or less dishonest and more or less subject to financial pressure or caste bias. No two men are born alike, each one being literally born under his own particular star, formed of different material, swayed by different ideals, educated and molded in a different mill by a different process. Even if all tribunals of justice were founded upon blind impartiality and administered free of cost, it would be plainly seen that equality before the law remains a mere chimera, a dream, and of no real value. Equality before the law is just a meaningless catchword, something like that famous Jesuitism, liberty regulated by law. Statute law may formally confer equal rights and privileges upon unequal citizens, but it cannot enforce itself. It must execute its mandate through human media, and that media is full up to the brim with superiorities, inferiorities, and inequalities. No legalism has ever been devised that strength cannot drive its coach and fore through, and it is a popular proverb in all lands that somehow there is one law for the rich and another for the poor. Indeed, the poor can never be placed upon an equality with the rich, not even by the pillage of the rich. Whether they are the fittest or not, the present proprietors of wealth should never permit themselves to be plundered without a savage struggle. Sooner or later, the hour of this struggle in its acute form shall arrive, but the rich must not dread it. If they prepare in time, the result shall not only justify their mastership, but render it impregnable. If they are fit. To be respected and secure, aristocracies must rest themselves upon sordid might, not upon paper credits, consuls, and bond issues. Should the opulence be conquered and pillaged, that in itself will be conclusive evidence that they are neither the fittest nor the best. Upon this earth there is no such thing as equal justice. All legal tribunals are based not upon ideal concepts of justice and fair play, but upon effective armed strength. This is a truism. Robbery under arms laid the cornerstone of every courthouse in Christendom and elsewhere. How then can the robbers and the robbed, the eagle and the pigeon, the chicken and the hawk, be placed in positions of genuine equilibrium before removable officials, specially paid and appointed to vindicate the law? That is to give forcible effect to the dicta of the strongest. All judges are authorized avengers armed to the teeth, and all hangmen are licensed assassins trained to kill. These words are not spoken in disparagement, assassins and avengers, ha, if that be so. Truly they that seek the Lord do suffer hunger, but lions seek for prey. When an army of occupation settles down upon an enemy's territory, it issues certain rules of procedure for the orderly transference of the property and persons of the conquered into the absolute possession and unlimited control of the conquerors. These rules of procedure may at first take shape as orders issued by military generals, but after a time they develop themselves into statute books, precedents, and constitutions. Indeed, all law is now and ever has been the mandate of successful belligerents, or rather the mandate of the few masterful personalities that ever inspire them. Equality before the law is thus a contradiction in terms, for law itself is an incarnation of inequality. It is true only in the subjective sense that all who obey the law are equally the servants of those who make it or caused it to be made. Drumhead court-martials are really law courts in embryo. Congresses and parliaments are merely committees of rapacious tax-gatherers. Legislators may describe themselves as representatives of the people, but that is only a cunning masquerade. Their chief vocation is to strengthen the law, uphold the Constitution, vote the annual appropriations, and devise ways and means of exploiting the nation or of permitting it to be systematically looted by their accomplices or their masters. The principles that govern a holdup are the selfsame principles that govern government. No government on earth rests on the consent of the governed.
And there is some cold, hard truth for you, boys and girls. Don't forget it. And I'll be back with you on Moon's Day. That's right. So don't run away. You need this. You need to fix. Yeah.
You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on. Always look on the bright side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
First thing that we see, you know.
Always look on the right side of life.
What do you lose? You know, you've gone from nothing, you've gone back to nothing. What do you lost?
Always look on the right side of life.
Nothing will come from nothing, you know what I say?
Oh, cheer up, you old bugger.
Come on, here's a grin.
There you are.
See? In the film. Incidentally, this record's available
always
in the foyer.
Always look on the right
side of life.
Who
do you think pays for this rubbish?
Always look on the right side of life.
I told him. I said to him. Bernie, I said, I'll never make that money back.
Always